You're listening to Creative Thursday, episode number 197. Welcome to Creative Thursday with Marisa Ann Cummings. We're talking all things life, business, and creativity intended to inspire and empower you wherever you are on your creative journey, both personally and professionally. Thank you for listening. Hi, hello, it's Marisa here, back with a special guest, season 2, episode 5. Today, I cannot wait to introduce you to Anne Wheel, a maker, a designer, actually self-described, I love this, a maker and lover of beautiful things. And if you visit Anne at her beautiful Instagram at Flax and Twine, it will be a feast for your eyes as you will come to learn about Anne. She's not only a wonderful maker, but she's a wonderful photographer as well. And I wanted to give you two bits of backstories before we dive into our conversation today. And one is, it's a little bit of backstory, and it's also intended to offer some encouragement to you today. I still remember getting an email from Anne asking if she was ready to join my then online course. You probably heard me talk about it. It was called In the Fishbowl, Life as an Artist Online. And I remember hopping over to her blog and saying with an absolute resounding yes, yes, hello, you are ready for this. And to see what Anne has created is just so inspiring. She continues to evolve. She continues to refine her offerings. She's now teaching her own online classes. She's moved into all kinds of different evolutions of her love. I'm going to not spoiler alert it for you. Her creative expression, her favorite. She's evolved in so many directions, and she's also authored 2 books since then. And I'm not sharing this story with you to take any credit for that. Anne did become a member of one of my In the Fishbowl Life as an Artist Online sessions. And I share this with you because sometimes, and I am always very honored and appreciative. Well, I know what that means for someone to reach out to someone that they might admire or look up to or potentially think have something figured out and ask them for an opinion on whether they're ready or they're good enough. I have also heard that recently. I've heard that more than once. And one of my other courses I created was called Permission to Be Creative and Make Money. A number of the expansive artists were both in the fishbowl and also took that course for me, because a lot of times I realize it comes down to us giving ourselves permission. And many times that initially takes the form in asking someone we trust, hopefully. Please, if you do ask this question of anyone, please remember to ask it only of someone you trust. It's a very delicate question, and we wait for the reply. And I'm also here to tell you that it has nothing to do with whether someone else gives you permission. It's truly going to come down to you saying, yes, I give myself permission. Yes, I believe I am ready for this. And you will grow into what you want to become, because we also always all start at the beginning. So just being at the beginning of something and not quite having everything refined, that's not going to happen really ever. That I will give you a spoiler alert, because you'll always be evolving and refining. But remembering that don't hesitate if you are a beginner to A, give yourself the permission to pursue what you love. I'm titling this episode inspired by Anne's conversation, you know, really pursue what gives you the most joy. Give yourself that permission. If you need it from someone else, I'm giving it to you right now. I'm giving it to you. And I know even when I encouraged Anne to jump in and pursue the work that she was called to do, I know it didn't have anything to do with me. I was simply a reflection back to Anne of what she already wanted to do and already knew that she wanted to do. So do your best to not second guess yourself. Do your best to own what it is that you feel called to do in this world, whether that is as a business, or I often talk here openly on this podcast, whether that's just pursuing more of your creative passion. And if I haven't shared it recently, you know, the intention of bringing you this series, which we have one left, was to bring a variety of makers and artisans in different disciplines to your world. So you might, maybe something new will get inspired for you, or maybe you hadn't even realized that you could make this kind of creativity a career. And either way, it's really to give you a glimpse into other artists' worlds and invite you to think about more of what's possible for you. So that is my story number one and my encouragement to you. And my story number two, and I have to be conscious and aware that I'm not coming to you, and I certainly hope I'm not sounding like I'm whining or complaining about the work that has gone into the series and the quote unquote mistakes I learned in the process, because I was a beginner at this and you'll know that. And in this episode, I instead am sharing this with you to remind you that in order for me to bring this series to you, I have really had to let go of my level of perfection. Partly because I'm not a professional videographer or editor. Partly because I had a lot of setbacks that were just accidents in the technical realm. And one of those moments is also in this episode. I just want to share with you, when you go to see the video, don't forget you can see the video as well. YouTube.com/Creative Thursday. This is the episode I learned I should probably wear readers. I have made it through life thus far without glasses, and I still really don't use readers very often, but I do now with my small painting. And it happened, though, technically to Sean and I, because I didn't realize it happened on my frame as well, on one of the camera three, one of the angles. So we shoot this with three cameras, a bit ambitious. And if I haven't told you, we shot it with DSLRs, which this is a very big tip for you. And yes, I will be collecting what I learned in the series and put it in one podcast. Should you ever want to pursue video or maybe create a series like this for yourself, I can save you some tough lessons learned. But we didn't realize, in fact, a professional videographer didn't know this either. DSLR videos shut off at about 20 minutes. We ideally, instead of shooting with those, needed to have just a video camera. And so the amount of extra work it took to pause at 20 minutes, match up the audio, match up the same camera angle with batteries going out. This project was ambitious. That's all I'll say. It's good that I didn't know what was involved, because I'm able to bring it to you. I know you are enjoying it, and that means the world to me. And I thank you. I thank you for listening and for watching and for sharing it and sharing it with people you know will enjoy it. But on this one, I forgot to put my readers on. And part of it is when you're looking to focus in a DSLR, the screen is probably about, what is it, 2x2? Really tiny. That's why you also see on professional productions, they have a big monitor, because who bases their shot on a tiny screen? Me, that's who. Me, forgot the glasses. So right away, I remember telling Anne, oh my goodness, the part with just you, the shot with just you is a little bit fuzzy. And I found out that at the end, the last part we shot with me, also a little bit fuzzy. I did try to sharpen it and it looked grainy and worse. And I decided it looks fine. And at our age, Anne and I, we're close in age. Maybe we like a little bit fuzzy. Maybe we do. We look good that way. You all know there's a Zoom, a filter on Zoom that can soften you. I have yet to use it. I'm holding out. Haven't done any plastic surgery or any Botox. I'm not saying I won't one day, but in the meantime, I'm also not using the filter. But let's just pretend that we have a softening filter on Anne and I through a portion of this episode. Okay, there's my disclaimer for this episode. And now I have another one for next week. It's got a story as well. And really the message of that story is simply to say, please don't let perfection keep you from sharing something you've made, especially when you're a beginner, pointing at myself now in terms of a video series. And it is the reason I let it go is not only to keep my word to the wonderful guests who took time to share their stories with me, who opened up about a lot of what they've been through, but also, and to share it with you as well, but to also just bring it to the world. The conversation to me, and I knew this going in because I had had a podcast before I created this series, I knew best case scenario, we have a video where you can actually see the person and the work they create. Worst case scenario, we've got an audio for a podcast. And in this case, we have both. We have both. And, oh, I didn't even mention this with Roberts. The last three episodes you'll see, I was able to shoot at my space when I had it here in LA. And it just made such a huge difference. It just made it all a lot easier. So I will, if you have any questions for me, DM me about the series. I will put together a little episode just highlighting some, again, lessons learned and share them with you, because I would love to see more creations like this. I know I started this because I believed video was coming. I tend to sometimes be just slightly ahead of that curve. Not that video hasn't been here, don't get me wrong, but that people were going to be embracing it more in every way, and it's coming even more. So if you are someone, especially in business, who is wanting to do more video, I'm happy to offer some guidance to you. Okay, then here we go. I invite you to meet Anne Wheel of Flax and Twine if you haven't met her yet. And I introduce you to her and I invite you to enjoy our conversation. Well, I was just telling you that I typically don't get into backstory, but your backstory is one of my favorites.
Thank you.
Because I think about you and I just think how you went from a world of finance to a world of, how would you best describe
what your focus is. Because I instantly think of you with arm knitting, mm-hmm. which you sort of help bring to the forefront. But you do so many things, so...
I do. I mean, it's hard for me. You know, arm knitting and finger knitting is what I became known for, but I love making... Basically, I'm a maker. I consider myself a maker. And that can come in so many ways. I primarily focus on fiber. It's generally where I lean to versus paper or, you know, other messier type crafts. I like fiber a lot. So that comes in knitting and crochet, arm knitting, hand crochet, which is doing it with your hands and arms as opposed to needles and hooks, but also embroidery, weaving. I like to sew, you know, all sorts of things. So
yeah, well, where's the passion for fiber?
I don't know.
I don't know if I've ever asked anyone that question before.
Well, and it's funny because there are a lot of people who are very passionate about fiber, where it comes from, you know, spinning it. And it's not that as much as I think I just like, I like the things you make with fiber. I just tend to lean towards those. I think I like the softness of it. And I don't know. There's a gentleness to it that... and a flexibility with it that really appeals to me. And you can get such gorgeous natural colors and variability in color. It's, I guess it's kind of like painting with something soft and touchable. And I think that because I love making so much and using my hands, it's just a part of that process, a part of that feeling of it. In addition to the making of it and the actual act of doing it. I don't know. You're asking me a question that I haven't thought of it either.
Well, it's I got to arm knit with you.
Yes.
and when I was, you know, my grandmother is German and she taught me crochet and knitting, and that was so much more common in that part of the world. I was always living in Florida or California where it's just warm and we're not doing that as much. But there is something very soothing about it. Like mm-hmm. what it, and it provides, it also can be very practical. Like you end up with something that you can use or snuggle with or wear.
Yeah.
It has something, it speaks to the home and what it creates in that environment.
Yeah.
So it's all of those things, but like what you, well, you're answering that question, like what would bring a person to like truly have a love for that?
Yeah, I think for me it's just the softness and the gentleness of it and the touchability of it that goes along with what you're creating and using that as a medium to make something beautiful. I think I really find it beautiful, and that is a lot of what drives me, is this wanting to make something from nothing, but something that I just think makes my whole body hum, you know, and just gets me excited, and fiber tends to do that.
So. Fiber makes your body hum. Well, yeah. And it is comforting in that way too.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
it's this, well, the tactile nature. I mean, I guess it all seems obvious, but
well, but and then I think there's a contrast too, because I love other natural things. I love natural woods and I love natural materials, but I like it in juxtaposition to the gentleness of the fiber. I don't know.
Do you remember the first time that it made your body hum?
I know, right? That sounds so funny, but it's a lot of things do. A lot of visual things do, and you know, it's just one of those things that I wish I had tuned into. That whole feeling sooner, that when I had that, like, you know, I started with braiding ribbons in the barrettes, you know, that a lot of us did, or like putting beads on pins. But it's just when I made things, when I saw, a lot of it was photography, honestly, when I would see a photograph where the colors or the lines or the textures, it just hit me right. And I think what's funny is what I realized is that's different for different people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like there's one way,
right,
that one thing that is beautiful. I think beautiful things strike different people differently. And for me, I kind of have this sweet spot where I'm like, oh, I love that. And that's that happened when I was young, but I didn't, and this gets back to that whole transition thing. It happened when I was young. I spent hours knitting, crocheting, embroidering, cross-stitching, pouring through. I was the only kid I knew that had like 4 photography magazine subscriptions, so I would just get these magazines and I would run upstairs and like pour through the pictures and cut things out and make a little notebook of photos that I loved. And so like all those hours spent, I just encourage people now, and I look at my family and I'm like, if you are spending hours doing something, that says a lot about what will make you happy in the future.
Yeah.
So those were the hours that I loved, and I just, as my childhood went on, I was like, well, I've got to be doing my math homework, and I was very into excelling and doing my best, so I would just spend a ton of time on homework or what was the right thing to be doing. And so my leisure time, the things that really brought me a lot of joy, kind of got left by the wayside. And it took me a long time to kind of get back to that, but I wonder if there had been encouragement early on in pursuing that and just exploring more what that was, that like love of that piece, what my other path might have been, and I don't know. But I look at my daughter and and my boys, I have 3 kids, and I wonder, I watch what they do, and I want to encourage them to explore those interests, not just as a hobby, but as potential. Doesn't have to be their career to do what they were doing, but like that it has to do with the things that really bring them joy, because that's how they're wanting to spend their time.
Yeah.
So, and then for me, I moved away from it. I was like, got to get the best grades, got to get the best job, got to get the best career, all that. And that's what led me to investment banking in New York. I was like, the best job. Everybody wanted that job.
I know, is this in the 80s? Are we in the 80s?
This was
90s.
The 90s.
Yeah.
It was 1990 that I went to college, and then 1994.
Same. We're exactly the same trajectory. Okay. But I did not think investment banking.
I mean,
but I know exactly what you're saying. I know we've talked about it. I had all of that really early, too.
Yeah.
I think the part that we're forgetting is we found it.
Yes.
It's just that now the world is much more accommodating, accepting, and supportive of, hey, if you see this super early, then go ahead. And I love that you added it doesn't have to be your career.
Right.
But now if you really want it to, when you're working with fiber, it's not occurring to you that you could really make a living with that. And for me, sadly, like even drawing and painting, and I loved to make as well. I was constantly making things for my dollhouse. I just never thought that. And my parents were supportive in saying, oh, we believe in you and you can do what you want, but get a college degree,
right.
Get good grades, and choose a career that you have the potential to make a living in.
And honestly, that is exactly kind of the advice that I got. You have the potential to be whatever you want. You just have to fulfill that potential and pursue it. But it wasn't like being an artist or doing creative things were thought of in the same way as these other positions. And there is a sense of financial security too that you get with that kind of trajectory.
Yeah.
And I think that was always in my mind. That was always in my family's mind in terms of what the possibilities were. And I don't regret it at all, because honestly, I had enough years in that world that I was able to pursue what I wanted to without a fear of my whole world coming crumbling down or paying the bills or anything like that. So it really enabled me to fulfill my dreams in a lot of ways as well. I mean, I basically didn't know what I wanted, got this job opportunity and said, okay, I'm gonna do this. And right from the start, it never felt like this was my meaning. This is what I want my life to be about. And it was a job. And I was good at it.
Did you have an affinity for like banking and that? Like when you're saying I love fiber, like that to me, that's like the great part of your story, that the contrast is so extreme, at least in how we think of the world, right? We just don't relate those things.
I've just always been one of those people that I just have always been very good at anything I've tried. So I did. I was good at math. I was good at analytics. I was good at doing artistic things. I feel very lucky. I was in a position to choose. And I was pretty good at it, at the number crunching, investment analysis, and I won't bore you with all the details of what I used to do.
Well, but, I like that too. But it's like you're a right brain, left brain.
I am.
And that's so helpful being in business now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think so too. And just being an analytical person in that way. So it's been good. But I missed doing more creative things. I missed, something felt like it was missing. So, and I had picked up knitting again, which made me happy, but I never felt like I had enough time to do it. And so...
Was this when you were in Manhattan doing banking?
So I was in Manhattan for 8 years, and that is when I started knitting again, and just on the side, but I was working a lot.
Did you bring it to the office?
No. No, I kept the things very different.
Bring it to the investment banking office.
You started to see more like knitters on the trains and stuff like that, but yeah. No, I wasn't to that point. It was kind of like late at night, or if I was watching a movie or something like that, I would knit. But it was when I was in New York, it was pretty much all banking. And then I left New York to get away, to kind of say, like, I need a break. I want to try and figure out what it is I want to do. I want to try and find a passion, something that I feel really good about every day, spending my time doing. And but at that point, we had decided to move away from New York. I had led backpacking trips and done a lot of outdoor education in my college years and after. And so,
where is that, on the East Coast?
The very first time I went backpacking was when I was a freshman in college, and I fell in love with it. I was like, it just was amazing. I love being outdoors. I love the mountains, and the idea that you could carry everything on your back and go for days, I thought was incredible, and just be outdoors and living there. And I loved it. I loved being with the people. You know, we were in a group. And so I continued to lead trips through the organization in college. And then we also I continued to lead backpacking trips for them. And then I was also a park ranger in Yosemite for a summer. And that was amazing. That was a lot of solo trips. You would go out for 4 days, and then you'd work issuing backcountry permits for, 4 days. It was great. Gorgeous park. And just, those were the most, I would say the most spiritual times I had were in nature like that. And so I really wanted to get back to that. And I missed that. Living in New York, it was hard to find that. And so there was a whole combination. What was I missing here in New York in my job? And so getting away from New York was the first thing. My husband and I decided to move to Boulder. We knew some people, knew we'd be able to go skiing and hiking and all that. And I thought I would, at that time, kind of find a way to pursue new interests. And I did, but it's hard. It's hard to leave the career you're doing and you've been doing.
And the financial security that came with that.
Yes. And so I basically kept doing the work. My bank kept calling me and asking me to do consulting jobs, and so I did that for many years. And then I had a family, and so that kind of all filtered into it as well. I also there was a time my husband at the time, well, he's still my husband, but at that time he was
Sandy.
He wanted to pursue his own career as well, a new career for himself. And so we actually had this time that was really neat, where I feel like it's kind of been a mutual thing. So he came to me. I was continuing to work for the bank. He came to me and said, I really want to pursue a different career. And so for 3 years, he started pursuing sports analytics. So that is like the money ball of sports, using data, lots of data to help make business decisions and player decisions for teams. And so I did, and I went back to work full time for a version of my bank, but basically doing investment analysis and asset management. And
was this when the first baby was there or before?
I had all three.
You had them all three.
By the
time you went to Boulder, didn't they come pretty close together?
They came in Boulder. Yeah, so they're all within. I have three children under 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was like boom, boom, boom. We got that all done quickly. But then I just remember holding. This is my. He's gonna kill me if he ever watches this, because I remember having my like three week old daughter, and that he came home and was like, "I quit my job today." What? And he says he gave me some warning, but I don't remember it. But anyway, so with that family, I said, "Okay, you know, I'll, you know, it's hard. You've got to support the family at the same time." So I went back to work, was working full time, and he started pursuing sports analytics. And after 3 years of now full time being back into what I was trying to get away with to begin with, and also doing a ton of traveling, after 3 years I said, I can't keep doing this. And so I asked him to, because he hadn't really gotten anywhere. I mean, he had been presenting at conferences and doing all this stuff, but he hadn't found a job with a sports team. So he went back to a regular job, and I was able to start cutting back my hours. Then he kept doing the work at night. To give him credit, he would work full day, go home, you know, we'd put the kids down together. He would go and work from 9 to 1 in the morning. And it was at that time that I started saying, now's my time to start spending more time on what I'm interested in, really trying to figure it out. So I had a friend that recommended you should start blogging. Do you know this blogging world? So this was back in 2010. And that's how I found you, because that was the other thing. So my friend was like, you should start blogging, and you really should take this class with Marisa called Into the Fishbowl. Living in the Fishbowl. What?
In the Fishbowl.
In the Fishbowl.
Life as an artist online. It is this.
Yes. So, and I remember calling you and saying, emailing you and saying, I don't have a blog. Can I be in your class? I have nothing.
I remember it too. I mean, yes, because, and I loved that because A, you were just willing to be like that vulnerable and be like, I am afraid I can't do this. And then I always love to tell people, yes, you can. It's like, yes, just come do, because we're all just figuring this thing out as we go.
I know, and it's so funny. Like, I just, those resources, like having a community of people that are like working and striving to find themselves and express themselves, it's so important to be a part of that. Like, I don't think I would have done any of this without that, because you could see it. Everybody was there, and, you know, there was a community, I forget what platform you had it on, but like we could
blog. I really did. It was like all on my blog. It was pre where we have all these sites, and which we're still figuring out, but yeah, it was on a blog, like a private blog.
A private blog.
There were no Facebook groups. I'm like, I don't even know,
was
there
Facebook? No, it was like some other thing that you logged into, but that was just really powerful to have that and have you talk to us every week. I don't know how often you do.
I think I did once a week.
But that was really great. And so I did. I started blogging. And I thought of it as this chance to just, I'm going to express myself creatively. I want to find my creative voice, because I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I knew that I love knitting, and I thought, well, knitting is maybe where I want to go. But right from the start, I was doing all sorts of things because I had my kids. And so I started blogging about kids' crafts and that sort of thing. And then kind of what's funny is that my purpose around my blog was to find my creative voice. And I feel like that's exactly what it helped me do. What I found was I loved taking photos. I loved telling people how to make things. I loved... I pretty much...
You take beautiful photos, by the way.
Thank you.
Really, really beautiful photos.
Thank
and
you
I
so
never
much.
Knew the part of your story where you said that you loved photography magazines. Like,
yes.
that was part of it. You have a great eye for that.
Thank you so much. It is something I love. And it is funny when you start thinking about, like, what your creative trajectory is, because I think you could easily pursue photography and be very happy with that, because there's something about that medium that... You know, that body hum thing.
That is going to be the theme of this
episode. I do get that.
From Yale to body hum.
It'll be like a new fitness class. But
You probably had that scholastically, too. Like, you said you enjoy both.
Honestly, that is, people say, like, oh, how could you do banking when, you know, you're such a creative person? I do get a little bit of a body hum when I get, like, numbers right or, like, a really great spreadsheet or something. So, like...
When my QuickBooks is reconciled...
Do you see what I'm saying?
My bookkeeper said I have very clean book. No, I love it.
Right? You get, like, a little rush.
Yeah.
And that's... Like, this is a beautiful spreadsheet.
This is new ground on the series. I don't think we've discussed the spreadsheets.
Well, and my kids now tell me, they're like, oh, Mom, Excel is so over. Like, nobody uses that anymore. But anyway, so I found I really loved the photography. And so that became a really big part of journaling the things I made. And sometimes I like the photography better than the thing itself. It's a part of, you know, the whole styling of the photograph and expressing what it is and its use and kind of it in a story is super exciting for me. So I really like that.
So blogging really was perfect for you.
Yeah.
Because it's all of those things.
Yes, because I love teaching, I love photographing, I like coming up with the idea. Sometimes I wish there were 12 of me so that I could do more things. But so what was funny, so here I was starting to write this blog, but I was still working and didn't have the resources or the readiness to say, like, I'm going to do this. I didn't really even think of it as, it felt like a hobby. You know, it was just, honestly, it was a way for me to be able to have more time to do the things I liked. But it was really fulfilling this part of me that I had been missing for so long. So after 3 years of supporting my husband, I said, or the family, while he did that, I said, I can't do this anymore. So he went back, started working this other job, and then he started working for the San Antonio Spurs and doing a little bit of that, and I said, okay, quit your job again, let's knock the ball out of the park for them, and hopefully it'll turn into a permanent position. Well, then so he quit his job, and 3 weeks after that he got called by the Baltimore Ravens, and that moved us to Baltimore.
That was one of those moments, right, where
those
cool moments where a decision gets made and something happens quicker than you think, maybe, or it feels like, I love when that happens.
It was, honestly, and also one of those times where you're like, when you finally let go of one thing, you kind of have the space for something else to appear. And it's funny how or just like how you can be like an overnight success on something you've worked
your whole life on.
Yeah.
we were just laughing because Louis C.K., the best line I heard recently is, I've been a stand-up for 32 years, and the last four have gone really well. It's just like, we all have to remind ourselves of that, because the other side of the world we live in is that it all looks like it happens
easily.
Because you're saying you started blogging in 2010, we're recording this in 2017, you've already put all of that time into building what is now, you know, really growing for you.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, and
not including everything that came before that.
Right.
That developed you as a person or gave you business acumen or created the desire for you to pursue it full time.
Yeah. And I think that, and I think you'll see this in the little piece of my story, how the same thing that happened for my husband kind of happened for me. But basically, so when we moved to Baltimore, it was kind of like, whoa, and our whole life changed kind of at the drop of a dime. And So when we did that, I finally was like, okay, now, and he said the same thing. He's like, now it's your turn. Stop working your finance job and start pursuing your blog and your design work on a permanent basis. And so that's what I did. It took me about a year to kind of wind everything down that I was working on for my on the investment side. And basically, I would say it was like the day. I feel like it was the day. I mean, I don't remember the timing exactly, but I sold my last project and was like, that's the last one.
Wow.
You know, I'm done. And I got a book offer the next day.
You did?
Yeah.
I didn't know that part of your story either.
It was within the week, you know. It just was kind of like...
They found you through your blog, I'm guessing.
They found me through my blog. And I actually have been working on a book proposal, but I hadn't gotten around to sending it out or, you know. But it's just funny, that whole thing. Like, when you finally close the door on one thing, these other opportunities open up. And so that was the time when I was like, I'm going to make my blog my permanent gig. And anyway, so... and then I started pursuing... I ended up bringing my proposal to other publishers, and that's kind of how my first book came about.
So you, once you were, someone reached out to you, you shopped it.
Yeah, because I'm just one of those people that is like, oh, I want to do it. I want to really put it out there and see what happens. And
that was the business acumen side.
Yeah. Well, everybody was like, you got a book offer, are you crazy? And I was like, well, except that maybe it could be better.
Yeah. Nice. I know. I never thought of that either. Sometimes you're like, this is so great. Well, this is like the whole world of the artist, too,
right. That
could use a little strengthening, is just being so thankful, which is great, and appreciative that we get to do these wonderful things. And why not make it more? Why not ask for more? You know, it's still, someone is getting something for the work you're doing.
Yeah.
Like this concept of it, it's fun.
Yes.
So maybe we don't need to be like should be looking for other things. Well, and here I'm always reminded in Hollywood, people are like, if you're not going to do it, someone's waiting right behind you who will do it.
And it's true. That is true. So it's hard. It is really challenging to and I struggle with it all the time still because I think, oh, this is a great opportunity. I should do it.
Right.
But it's hard to say, well, no, my time is worth more, my work is worth more. I've spent a lot of time investing in what I have to offer, and it should be paid for.
Yeah. How do you decide? Like, what is that inner compass
terrible.
For you?
I think it's more a matter of, like, sometimes I just forget, and I think, like, this is, I want to do this. I think it's just a gut instinct, a gut reaction thing.
For like a per project,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, a per project thing. Like some of it would depend on how much time I had, if I think it will lead to other opportunities. You know, in this case with the book, I really thought, you know, I think this is really special what I have, because I thought, this is the funny part, I thought, there aren't any books on finger and arm knitting. This is going to be huge. But meanwhile, what I didn't realize is actually in the publishing world, it's better if there are projects and books like yours.
So you was can prove yours
that they've done well in the past?
Right.
So I thought it was so special that it was like never been done before. But it's like, oh no, that's actually not good.
Yeah.
They want to see that it's been done before, that it's done very well, and how you will be different.
So you were one of the first books to market with it.
Yeah, I mean, there were some other arm knitting books that came out that were just kind of quick things, but to look at it from a very, to come at it from a very like intense design perspective. And I mean, I spent a year developing the projects in that book, and so, yeah, one of the first, I would say. But that was really, so that was an exciting time to go out to these other publishers, and I found an agent, and to me that was worth, definitely
it was worth it.
Because, one, I don't like the legal, it's just, it becomes too much to try and negotiate on your own behalf.
I know.
It's challenging.
It's
and
really
it's exhausting.
Hard. It's exhausting, and you still realize... We are learning as you go, so you're missing things
right.
that will be completely natural for someone else.
Well, and in this case, it's such a big investment of time and a big, hopefully a big check coming your way, that it's, I just don't think it's something to fool around with. If it's a smaller item and you're kind of learning on the go and you're figuring out what rights, you know, there, when there's smaller decisions, you can be like, whoa, I won't let my rights go like that next time.
Right.
Or I'll make sure I have this, like, you know, one of the big ones now is like to, I try and make sure that the pattern rights come back to me. Like, you know, if it's going to be in a magazine, I make sure those pattern rights come back to me after 6 months or 9 months.
So you can sell it.
So that
if
I can sell
to.
It because, I mean, frankly, I mean, I love magazines. I have a lot of magazine subscriptions. I love getting them, but they are limited, you know, and so it's really nice to have the rights to be able to sell kits or teach class based on it. Or
yeah.
Well, and the pattern.
I would have never thought that that was even up for discussion.
Right.
Because a magazine typically, tell me if I'm wrong, isn't paying you for that usage. They're sort of trading your work for exposure. Or are they sometimes also paying you maybe, but maybe nominally for like an article or...
Yeah, I mean, it feels nominally sometimes. I wish magazines had more money. Subscribe. No. So it makes it so that nominal fee, sometimes I will trade a magazine just for the exposure. I do treat that on a case-by-case basis just because sometimes it's hard like to think
you
actually get traffic from, you don't know.
You really do not know.
So, and that's where it's really valuable to have that pattern come back to you because you think, a lot of times for a magazine, I'll do something more involved, more interesting than I would in my natural course of work. Like, I really take time to develop something special, or they're asking for something special. And so to be able to then use that, for either the images or the pattern or whatever later, makes taking the time to do that for the fee that you get worthwhile or more worthwhile.
Yes. That makes sense.
So those are smaller ones that I've learned from as I go along. But with the book, it just felt hands down and made more sense to have that agent. And I think they are able to. I mean, she built a competitive bidding situation around my book that I would never have.
Yeah,
I wouldn't even, you know,
wouldn't know
like
how
she
to
got them
start
all into
that.
The appropriate people.
Yes.
And they all looked at
wonderful.
It. And, yeah, so
that's
that
so
was
great.
Huge. It was huge. So, and then now I'm working on my second book. So.
And then you keep the same team, publishing and agent,
same agent, same. The editor is the same as was the person that was assigned at the end of my book because I lost my editor in the middle of my book, which was sad. But I love my new editor, so she's great. And working with the publisher was great. What was really nice is I have full art direction over my book. I can choose the photographer and the stylist. I mean, within reason. I mean, they're asking to look at the portfolios of these people, but the whole look and feel of my book is kind of directed by me.
And did you negotiate that? Is that something
yeah,
you
I mean,
had
that
to
was,
make clear?
Honestly, when I had the offers on the first book, that was one of the reasons I went with Potter Craft or Penguin Random House is the parent company, or Crown is the parent of
I know, it's multi-tiered.
It is multi-tiered, but that is part of the reason I chose them, because I knew I had that ability. So, that's because the photography and how it looks
matters
at the end of the day,
so much.
It matters so much to me. That
especially for that kind
cool.
of book.
Yeah, and it was funny. My husband said to me when I started the whole process, he said, "What is your main goal? Like, what do you want to get out of it?" And this might be silly, but I really wanted a beautiful book. That was my main goal. One that people could learn from and people could make beautiful projects. But it wasn't about the money as much as it was pulling together a body of work that worked as a whole and was a beautiful portfolio of work, and that's what I feel like I was able to do.
You did.
So,
yeah.
Like,
you succeeded in
Thank
your
you.
Goal
Thank
and it's
you.
Doing well.
Yeah, it's well, this is what's exciting. So as a, and this is what I think, what I try and like, I try and let go of this whole sense of like, but I want to try and achieve this or achieve this. I just kind of keep pulling back to like, if I do my best work, if I put my best foot forward on all of this, it will be successful and it will succeed, instead of trying to optimize dollars at every turn. I think there is a balance between the business decisions and time and putting, you know, it's a balance of like choosing those opportunities, but also always doing your best to put your best foot forward and not just do it for money or not just...
Right. You're right. It absolutely is.
Yeah.
There isn't one, there will never be one formula. And it is so personal where you draw those lines or make the decision to do one or the other or both, or it's, there's so many factors. You can't just take one.
Right. So I can't, yeah, you're right. So like, I can't just say like, oh, you should do it this way. But I think with each opportunity, I look at it that way. Like, will I have the opportunity to do my best work? Am I getting compensated? Do I, you know?
Well, and with your book, did you have to invest more of your own funding to get it the way that you wanted,
well,
the first
so
one?
This is the trick. I think this is shifting in the publishing world. It doesn't always work this way, but in my case, my advance, so what I got paid for my book, included the photography budget and the art budget. So,
mine did also at the time.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the extent you can keep those costs low, the more money you have to put it in your pocket.
Right.
But then you have this balance, right? So if you save all the money that your photography isn't any good or that you're not really showcasing your work, then your book may not sell. So I think you have to kind of decide beforehand where that falls in terms of importance, or do your best to put... I think photography really sells books. So to me, it's worth putting that money into it. So I probably spent more than I should have, but I feel like I got a beautiful book out of it. And as you mentioned, it's doing very well. It just went into its second printing, so that's really exciting. And it got translated into French, which is exciting. And they say it has a good tail.
What does that mean?
Which means basically they look at the first year and how many books they expect you to sell in your first year, and they have a certain goal number for that. And then if it's continuing to sell well, they get the sense with my book that it will continue to be a resource that people go to. So it'll continue, the tail of the sales of the book after that first year are very strong, and they expect that to continue. So that's good.
It is good.
Yeah.
It's very good. Well, and it's the, you know, it's the entree for you to do this other one. I remember when I first was negotiating on my own, and I had the same situation where my blog really was the entree for that. It happened for a lot of us without even meaning to, because you're obviously putting a book together in a weird way. You're like putting it right out there for everyone to see.
Mm-hmm.
I remember dear friend of mine said, you know, it's really a business card,
mm-hmm.
which is at first it sort of hits you like a splash of water.
Yeah,
you're like,
really?
Well, isn't it? Because this was, I don't need to repeat those stories. I've done podcasts about it, but it was at a time where I thought it was so much more lucrative than it was.
Mm-hmm.
And of course it has that potential once you become known, and you know, it has that, but when you're starting, it isn't. And once you accept that, though, it's sort of the attitude that you're taking, too, which is, well, then I'm going to make this the most beautiful representation, not only just for me, but it is a calling card for you and your work, and
mm-hmm.
it's looking at it from a slightly different angle. And then if it happens to hit and, you know, goes crazy, then great.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's true. And it's hard to balance... this is one of those things that I learned from you, like that importance of it doesn't need to be perfect, that sometimes that can make you freeze so much that you don't get work out there. So I think that also is this balance between you want it to be your best work, you want it to be beautiful, but you also need to just keep letting things go sometimes because... And that's one of the things I really struggle with, because I do want it to look right and be beautiful. And
Where is that line for you? Keep asking. The other theme of this one is, Leanne, where is your line? How are you making these decisions? Because of course I relate to you. I love the perfectionist. I don't love that. I have it in me. Yes. I have the desire to want to control things. Mm-hmm. And because I haven't learned to let go, I'm learning now. Because you have to at some point. You will stunt yourself, right? Mm-hmm. This is the conversation we're now having, which is, well, if we don't get help to assist us in creating these beautiful products, you know, not only if you're doing it yourself will it not get into the world, but then as your business grows, so much won't get into the world because now you're micromanaging everything.
Yes, yes. It's just an ongoing struggle. Yeah. I think it's just one of those things. I don't know. You know, I think I just try and have it in the back of my mind, to just try and execute and keep going, right? And one of the examples of where I'm doing that is I'm trying to do more video, and doing that it's hard because then what's always kept me from doing it is I wanted to, with my photography, I can control how it looks, I can make it look really beautiful, and with video it's oh my gosh, that's even harder.
I'm bothered by my lav. Is the lav? Hopefully it works.
I know.
Well, it adds. It's just everything multiplied. It's 10x video. It really is.
It is.
There's all these factors that were the sound, the lighting, mm-hmm. the photography, the look of it. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. really hard, and it's a whole other skill level.
Right, and that and if you're one of them, like me, I'm obsessive about. I spend a lot of time cropping and adjusting my photos and making them look just right. And so then you multiply that one little moment times 10 minutes of those moments. It's oh my God.
It'll take you forever.
It'll take me forever. So I've really avoided that. But, I'm just starting to be you just got to start putting it out there and, hold your aesthetic to it. But over time, it will match that aesthetic. And I don't know if you've heard that Ira Glass quote.
Yes, so remind me what Ira Glass says. I know Sean plays it for his classes, his students.
Well, Ira Glass basically says, and I don't have the quote right here, but he basically says, when you start doing a new creative process, we have the taste to know what's really good, and we want to hit that. We want to hit that good.
Yes.
But our work is still down here.
I remember it now.
So then you feel, don't be disappointed about the gap between where you want to be and where you are, because to get up to where you want to be, it just takes work, 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 and doing lots of work will eventually get you closer to that taste, that hum or whatever,
the body hum,
that you want, and so when I get disappointed or discouraged or just feel like, ugh, I can't get there, I just think it just keeps taking those iterations. And then, what's amazing now being where I am, it's I can go back 7 years and look at where I was when I started my blog. Any of you all can. If you go way back on my blog, you can see, you're oh, wow. The quality of my projects, quality of my photography, the quality of my writing, all of that has improved over time. And that's what happens when you are working at something you love and you have a sense of where you want to be and you just work at getting better and better and better. So that's what I always come back to. But it is, you can't, if you wait until it's that perfect or that level, then you would do nothing for 7 years. That wouldn't have been good. So you need, I think you just need those experiences and that building to get where you are.
Yeah, there's no shortcut to that.
No, it's the relationships you form and the practice
you're
you
right
get
about that, yeah.
And, that's a big part of it is building a community of people, building the experience. And I realize this too, even with my photography, in the very beginning, I learned only the littlest of things to do on my camera to get the shot that I wanted. And then I did that for 6 months. this is in manual mode. And then I learned, oh, I can adjust this too. And then, you know, you just layer that in, and then your photography starts to get that much better. And then you get the ability to do the, you know, overhead shot and the this kind of shot. And, you know, you just, your toolbox builds over time. And both of your skills and the people you know and people you can rely on and resources. And I think in today's world, there's this, like, this tendency to get, like, panicked. They all know each other. There are all these skills, these tools I need. There are all these resources I need. Or there are just so much out there. But just, you know, I try and take a deep breath and be like, well, what does this one say? Or what can I learn by trying this one thing? That was, you know, another thing. So somebody gave me the advice, just one thing at a time. And sometimes that really helps a lot.
We need Ira Glass. And those, we all need those reminders. I mean, when you're saying panic, is it you, or are you noticing now when you teach people, are you sensing that through students?
No, you know, it's funny. Most of my teaching is, I teach a lot of arm knitting and some of the hand crochet and stuff like that. And a lot of that teaching, they're panicked about getting arm knitting.
One of those.
Yeah, right. And
I wasn't too bad, but
no,
yes.
You were great.
But it's actually a lot that you're mentally.
It's hard to learn new things. Like I try.
Oh yeah, and then there's that. See, we just want it like now.
I know, and so you know, I just try and remind people like you're. I mean, and as adults, your brain is not as malleable as it was when we were kids, when you could just pick things.
Well, no,
up
you
like
think
that.
It's just filled with way more stuff. We have to like go through filing systems. To clear a new space.
We just get into those habits, you know, those grounded habits.
So.
And your neural pathways are more set. So you have to work harder to, like, get it
to
shift or to, like, build a new one. It's just harder. But what I find is, you know, just having that relaxing space, giving people the reassurance that they'll get it, helps a lot.
It does.
Also, if people get frustrated, if it doesn't look how they want or whatever, just know that you need to practice and that sort of thing. But the good thing about arm knitting is it's pretty easy to pick up, and people are really successful with it, so that helps. That helps. But I'm not really talking to people about their businesses so much, but when I talk to friends or colleagues or people I work with, I think we all have that. It's so hard not to in this day and age because there's just so much out there. And there's when you're an entrepreneur and you're trying to do it all, it's hard to know, like, do I spend my time on this, on this, on this, on this? And it can be really challenging. I haven't mastered it by any stretch.
Well, I'm thinking that maybe we just don't. The person... One of the people I listen to, he's really well known in the social media space, is Gary Vee,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Gary Vaynerchuk, who did the Wine Library. It was like one of the first people to sort of do so well with video.
Right.
And I've heard this a million times in spiritual teaching. You know, we know this, like, enjoy the process. But he has this great conversation with a 20-year-old who's panicking.
Right.
And I understand, because the world we live in, that's just part of it, regardless of your age, I think. But this person is forgetting the life experience that we're talking about, that you only know when you're there. I know I totally resisted it as a 20-something. If my former boss ever watches these, I was like, nope, I know what I'm doing, I'm going.
Yeah.
But you do get hindsight, and then you realize, oh, sure, it all makes sense. And I don't know why, for the first time, maybe I was just ready to hear it. When I heard him say, yes, I want to, you know, buy my favorite sports team. I also heard him say, but I'm really enjoying the process of getting there. Like, this is this humongous goal for most people that will never happen. So it's this big thing. So if he's not, you know, he's remembering to enjoy that. At least that's what he says he's doing.
Right.
And I think... I've been through this period of time where I've done it so many different ways and asked all these questions and trying to figure it out. And I'm just like, oh, this is just it.
Yeah.
This is just what it is to mean, what it means to live this life on every level. It's just, you're always going to be figuring it out, because as soon as you feel like you've mastered something,
there's
you're going to want to master something else. Like, I do all this small work, and then taking that to larger work is, it's harder than I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. But yet, I've been painting nonstop for a decade.
Right.
But it's a completely different process. And one other thought to what you were saying is, one thing I'm realizing too with a little bit of space and time is that sometimes what starts out as, maybe we call it naive work, where we aren't thinking so much about the process and then thinking so much about getting to that next level, mm-hmm. has a beauty to it that can almost never be captured again.
Yeah.
Because we're so in it now, right?
Yes.
So part of me is also trying to remember, can I find my way back to that and enjoy that process?
Right.
And see what, with this other wealth of experience I have, what will happen in this painting, for instance, that will allow me, it will reveal something to me because it's not so skilled yet.
Right.
Like, can I let that exist without taking this whole other world of business knowledge and expectation and where I need to be and what's happening and not squash it?
Well, and as a creative person, like, it's important to let that exist. And I see this all the time with my daughter, who's like, just, I mean, she is loosey-goosey all over the place, but like, there isn't a sense of what she should and what she shouldn't do, what she can, what she can't do. I mean, she is just like in the heat of the creative moment. I'm like, oh, I mean, what can you do, or what would you do if you didn't have those expectations or wanting it to look a certain way or be a certain way or fit this image of what you're hoping for? I mean, that to me is the magic of that creative space, that I think you're right, that's like critical to try and like get there. And part of it is enjoying the process.
Well, I didn't even know. I always think, I don't anymore, I always thought I would reach some level, some plateau, some like a little something. Yeah, like a little, like, I got this. And I think, I don't know yet, I'm in the middle of it. I think that I got this is, I got that I don't. I'm, well, this is, yeah, that I don't got it.
And
that the next step with that, I mean, everyone always says that, right? The more you know, the more you realize you don't know. The next step with that, though, is a level of peace that's coming that I haven't had before.
Right.
Of just going, oh, yeah, because now we're at this stage of work, and we have this perspective of even knowing, even knowing that this arrives, right? No one was that far out ahead of me that I could talk to who would say, hey, an important part of being a creative in business is letting that creativity continue to live within you and not letting all of the business and the expectations around that and the responsibilities that come with a growing business take that away from you.
Right.
But I wouldn't even know to think of it.
Right. Which
is one of the reasons I love doing this, is just adding a little more insight to the world. Because when you hear someone out ahead of you say it, then it goes in. You're still only going to get it when you're going to get it.
Right.
But it's just helpful to remember that, but I wouldn't even know that. And there'll be something, right, if we sit here 10 years later that we won't know.
Like, oh, how naive we were.
And it was a great time. Like, that's the part where I'm like, it was great,
yeah,
when I didn't,
yes,
know how to. I do look at very early paintings and I really was unaware or unsure about how to execute a character out of my imagination or even paint it in more of a refined way. And now I go, I really love it like that. And I can't ever go back to that.
Right. Right. That's interesting. Well, and I think there's, you said it to me once and I see it all over, but it's, your work is it's a marathon, not a sprint. You know, and so to pace yourself.
I think Oprah. Yeah, and Oprah always says, well, she also is like, don't look back at the other runners. Which I think that was before Instagram.
Well, no, but it's
or
true
Facebook, because it slows you down.
I'm telling you, like,
I mean, it would be a good.
You know, I've been hearing all this, you know, all these like current studies or whatever about, when, and we know this, but it's so hard how comparison like sucks the joy out of our lives. So like, you really have to just kind of be in it for your own stuff and not compare, you know, and just try and let that go, because it can, it can suck your own satisfaction out of it, your own sense of like what you've accomplished, and you kind of, yeah, like running your own race, I guess. But not a sprint, because my tendency is like, I got to do this, and I got to do this, and I got to do this. It's like, well, if I don't have it on that one, maybe I'll do it on the next one. Or, and learning as you go, like that. But it's hard to remind yourself.
It is. So we talk to each other. Then we go, oh, yeah, thank you. Like you said a lot today. I'm like, that's right, Anne. That's right.
I'm like bringing your words of wisdom right back to you.
And that is right. So if you were coming to the close, is there something, I know that you're thoughtful in terms of what you share with your writing and your teaching. Is there something that you think is important that you want to share that we haven't already covered, or a part of your story that you feel is valuable would maybe bring comfort to people?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's interesting. The thing that I found, and I've been giving this a lot of thought recently, is that it's so personal what we do. In a way that, you know, banking never was. You know, that was a job, and I got a lot out of that. But this is, like, me. And me being really vulnerable and putting myself out there and like, putting myself out there for people to judge and for people to talk about and or me to compare, whatever.
Through and all of your various...
Just through everything. Through,
it feels, you know, like through like blogging, your patterns.
Like, it's in the fishbowl.
Yeah.
You know, like, people... can see, people can see your work, people can see what you're doing, and
your home, how much of your personal life you choose to share.
Yeah, and it's, there's, when you're creative and that's your work, it is very personal. It's very much you exposed, you sharing, you know, who you are, what you are, and what talent you have to the world. And that's really difficult for me to put myself out there like that. And
how so? Because you make it seem pretty easy.
Oh, like, I don't like it.
You don't like
it? No, I'm always like, sometimes I just want to be like, don't look. And I've, you know, over the years, I've really worked to try and be, just kind of let that go. But I bring this all around to this whole idea that it is so personal and kind of so intense that way, that you kind of have to just make sure, first and foremost, you're taking care of yourself. And in this crazy kind of work environment.
Like basic needs
just
care
basic,
of yourself?
Yeah, basic needs.
Like physical, so you have a stamina.
Yes, so like, I mean, it sounds so silly, but you need to get good sleep. You need to, you know, be physical. You need to be eating well. You need, like, those things are so critical to your own sense of
well-being.
Yeah, well-being. And that well-being really affects your work. And so balancing those things and so, you know, we've talked about a lot today, but I feel like that is another piece of it that is important for you to do your best work, for me to do my best work. And I haven't always put that at the forefront, and that's something I really want to do going forward. Keeping in mind, you know, I've always, like, I don't have time. I've got to do this, and I'll stay up till 2 in the morning. Or, you know, I don't have time to go to the gym, or I don't have time to make a salad, or whatever it is. I mean, it's like, no, take a walk. You won't know what you can't imagine what you might think of on that walk, and it's so restorative, and it'll make you feel calmer and like be in a better place to do whatever you need to do that day. Or so those are the things I'm starting to be like, yeah, that's probably a good idea too. And I wish that I had kind of, you know, put that as a first sooner.
Well, that's, it's hard to do. I mean, this is the, and, you know, and you're a mom of 3 kids.
That's hard.
Like, I'm not even going to delve to, like, figure out the balance with all of that. But when you're building something and, you know, we've talked about, like, there's financial surviving at the end of that.
Yes.
I'm not going to say that any part of that is easy to say that you have to... You have to reach those end points again yourself where you go, even this week I'm going, wow, I just can't work the way I used to. It's like what I now know isn't letting me. When I do, it feels really squirrely. And my body just doesn't want to anymore because I can't maintain that forever. So I'm getting a new perspective on it, even though I know it, and I've you know, always done certain things to keep a balance. But it's really difficult to say, I could do this thing that might net me this thing that will survive and afford the life I'm choosing to live, but right. I'm going to put it aside and trust that this other thing that is ultimately related to my health, which nothing exists without that, mental and physical. That's definitely been a struggle for me to truly trust that.
It's really hard because you think, I gotta go, I gotta do this, I gotta get it done, you know, all this stuff. And I look now and I think now about, like, well, if I've stayed up till 2 a.m. to get a project done, I the sense of my body the next day in terms of how anxious it is, how it can be, like, depressed, it can just feel crappy, like, all those feelings, I'm like, did I always feel this way when I stayed up till 2 a.m? And I'm just more aware and sensitive
possibly.
To like how it is and how that makes my day go.
Yeah.
So it's like just learning over time that like it doesn't pay to necessarily do that.
It's not what I've learned the hard way. It's not really giving me the reward I thought it would, even in terms of financial, like monetary or, you know, I mean, sometimes there are those moments where it works, but it's not enough. It's not, like, justifying it enough to continue to take from myself.
Yeah. So that's one of the things that I've really started thinking about, that I would say the sooner you can start thinking about that, the better.
So just tell someone right away, just make just like, time for those things, like as soon as you can, have that part of your habit.
Yeah, because this whole idea like you're running a marathon, not a sprint, it not only just applies to your little work bubble, it's like everything, you know. And maybe it's just getting older, you start to realize like, if I just keep running myself into the ground all the time, things start breaking. They don't heal themselves the way they magically used to. I think that's just important for overall, like, mental health and mental well-being as well.
Which supports everything. Well, you started something in the new year where you were trying to do resolutions, I'll put air quotes, related to just, and that was fun for you, right?
This has been awesome. I'm still in the middle of it. This is actually, it has really changed my year so far. I'm super excited about it because it's a year of mini resolutions. So instead of saying, like, I'm going to, do this one thing all year, which is challenging for anybody, I'm taking this approach that's like, okay, take one commitment and do it for 30 days.
One thing.
And I have, you know, anywhere from, so some of it has to do with that, like, well-being, so, and some of it has to do with work. So I've done things like, I am going to shower and get dressed every work day this month, instead of just kind of this sense of like, oh, I don't know, go to my pajamas and, like, you know, work away at the computer. You know, how would you feel about your day? How productive would you be if you were doing that every day? Or I had a month where I made it to the gym 5 days a week, or like this month I'm making a list of the 3 most important things I need to do the next day.
I like that one.
That has been really helpful. Actually, what's been most helpful about that one is I've scheduled out my day for the next day, and then I realize how much time I actually have versus my idea of a day.
Yes.
And that has transformed my just sense of completion or my sense of like what I've been able to accomplish in any given day. Because when you actually write out, you know, 2:30 to 3, go pick up the kids. 3 to, you know, 4, hanging out with the kids. 4 to, you know, 4 to 4:30, emails or like whatever it is, or what you hope to do today. Sometimes I'll like take what I think is a whole day, and I'm like, I have exactly 2.75 hours tomorrow to actually do anything productive. Well, that changes your sense of what you're going to be able to accomplish than if you just think like, I have so much to do tomorrow. So then I think, oh, well, okay, if I only have 2 hours, what can I reasonably accomplish in those 2.5 hours? And I think more carefully, okay, these are the 3 most important things I need to do.
Nice, Anne.
So like, these are the things that I've learned. It's like little mini experiments. I'm like, that is really helpful. And I don't necessarily keep every single thing. It's not like I like have promised myself that I'll like keep all these resolutions going. I don't make it to the gym 5 days a week still, but I make it a lot more than I used to. And because I just realized like that feels really good and that's important. And the same thing with getting dressed, or like I do that more often and that feels a lot better. And you know, and then this scheduling thing, like that probably won't happen every day, but it definitely helps. So it's been good.
That was awesome, man.
I have meditation coming.
Oh yeah, we've been doing that one.
Every morning. I have all sorts of fun things. So
it's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, Anne, thank you for joining me. Thanks for putting all the beautiful work that you do put out and get past your perfectionist gate and share it with us, because we love it.
Thank you.
And that's
really been nice being with you.
And that is all. We are complete. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Sean.
Creative Thursday is recorded and produced by me, Marisa. You can find all things Creative Thursday at creativethursday.com and creativethursdaycourses.com. And you can find all things Anne Wheel at flaxandtwine.com, FLAX, and then ANDTWINE.com. And same for Anne's Instagram handle. Her two books are Weaving Within Reach and Knitting Without Needles. They are beautiful. You now know, you've listened to Anne's episode, you've gone over to YouTube and seen the episode, because it's so visually, her photography is so beautiful. It's very visually inspiring. You will love those books. You'll love them. And what else was I going to tell you? Oh, please share this episode with anyone who would like a little creative inspiration today, who would like a reminder to follow their joy and their passion. And special thank you again to Anne for being a guest, and also for sharing her beautiful photography and video as part of this episode. And until next time, friends, wishing you a beautiful creative week. Thank you for listening.